90s music was absolutely amazing. That's right. I have realized that more and more over the years. And maybe I'm biased because I spent my most formative years in the 90s. But I don't think so. Whether it's my local radio station having their all 90s weekend, or it's when I'm doing this research for this podcast, I just can't help but realize how awesome 90s music is. And today's episode is all about two specific albums from the 90s that are two great ones. If you want to start with 90s music, these are probably two places to start. And there's a lot more to go through when it comes to great albums and music from the 90s, but it's a great starting point. Now, before I get into today's episode, I want to talk a little bit about WrestleMania 40. It has happened, and if you're a wrestling fan like me, it was a good show. I'm not saying it was the greatest WrestleMania of all time, but it was quite good. And night two of WrestleMania was definitely the night I preferred, and there was two amazing matches on that second night. And the first one would be the triple threat for the United States title, where Logan Paul defended against Kevin Owens and Randy Orton. It was a really fun match, very effective, and really executed as well as you can possibly do for a three-way triple threat match. And love him or hate him, and a lot of people hate Logan Paul, I thought he did an amazing job once again. I don't know that I have ever seen somebody who was a social media guy or an athlete in many ways, but a guy that comes into the wrestling business at a high level with such inexperience, and for him to adapt and evolve and develop so quickly, you got to give the guy respect. I know it's hard for people to say, but I'm telling you, I respect it. What a great match. And then, of course, there was the main event. Cody Rhodes finishing his story, defeating Roman Reigns for the WWE Undisputed World Championship, ending that historic reign of Roman Reigns, and not only a fun match, but a ton of tension and a great story was told. There was a lot of shenanigans. There was the bloodline, and then there was all the people that came out to help neutralize them. And to me, it worked out well. And I loved the celebration at the end, celebrating Cody as the new champion. It felt like a monumental moment that it was. And the internet these days, people can't fucking help themselves to bitch. I saw a lot of people complaining about the show, about WrestleMania in general, about the finish, about Cody's mask, about the fact that The Undertaker came out instead of Stone Cold and Steve Austin, about Seth Rollins' involvement, which I thought was an emotional masterpiece of a moment in that match. But people can't help themselves but to bitch and complain about things. I guess that's the nature of it. And people are entitled to their opinions, but I thought it worked out just fine. That's all I have to say about that. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Pop Culture Reflections, the podcast about all things pop culture from the 80s, the 90s, and beyond, and proud member of the You Run Podcast Network. Please check out this show and all the great shows at YouRunPodcast.com. Today, we're talking about two albums that were released 30 years ago this year in 1994. Let me start with the first one. And yes, it's an album from Nirvana. As you know from the title of this episode and from the logo, we're talking about MTV Unplugged in New York. Yes, at that time, I did not connect with Nirvana. I told this story in a previous episode that it took me a while to find a connection with Nirvana, but once I did, it was impactful, and I went back And I delved into their catalog of music. And of course, I came to MTV Unplugged in New York. I remember some of the tracks, remember seeing some of the videos when I was younger. And obviously, I didn't connect with it. But listening to this album, going back to it now, it is unbelievable. Let me give you some facts. MTV Unplugged in New York is the first live album by the American rock band Nirvana, released by DJC Records on November 1st, 1994, nearly 7 months following the death of Kurt Cobain. The album was part of the cable television series MTV Unplugged and features a mostly acoustic performance. It was recorded at Sony Music Studios in Hell's Kitchen on November 18th, 1993. It debuted at number one on the U.S. Billboard 200 and was certified 8 times platinum by the Recording Industry Association of America in 2020. It won the Best Alternative Music Performance at the 1996 Grammy Awards, making it Nirvana's only Grammy Award win. The performance was released on DVD in 2007. It has received universally positive reviews from critics. And in 2012, MTV Unplugged in New York was placed at number 313 on Rolling Stone's list of the 500 greatest albums of all time. The 2020 edition of the list placed it at number 279. Rolling Stone also named it the 95th best album of the 1990s. The Readers rated it the 8th best live album of all time. NME placed MTV Unplugged in New York at number 1 on their list of the 50 greatest live albums. Now, to me, this is a perfect example that rock bands can translate well to live acoustic style music. And yes, I know it's not 100% acoustic, but it's close enough. And it fucking works so well. I also love the banter between the members of the band during the set. Kurt's humor and sarcasm is a highlight. Kurt sounds amazing. And his songwriting prowess is on full display in this amazing performance. Listening to this album fills me with regret that we didn't get more years with Kurt and the opportunity to watch him evolve as an artist. One crazy fact, via CBC Radio out of Canada, Cobain wanted a certain look for the set. The mix of stargazer lilies, black candles, and a crystal chandelier gave the stage an ominous look. And it turns out the dark design was at Cobain's request. In trying to capture what he wanted, the show producer asked, "You mean like a funeral?" Cobain reportedly replied, "Exactly like a funeral." It's a great atmosphere. It's a great look. It's a great sound. And the band is absolutely amazing. To me, not only is it such a great live album, but it's such a great live performance to behold. Let me tell you my top 5 favorite tracks from this album, starting with my honorable mention, which is their cover of the Meat Puppets song, Lake of Fire. This is possibly Kurt at his vocal, absolute, iconic best. All right, my 5 favorite tracks: About a Girl, The Man Who Stole the World, Polly, Something in the Way, and of course, Where Did You Sleep Last Night? An amazing and emotional cover of the Lead Belly song. Now, what do I think is the legacy of this album? Well, I think there's an argument to be made that it is the greatest live album ever recorded. You name me a live album that's better from start to finish than this, I'll wait. This is personally my 2nd favorite album from Nirvana as a whole. And much like my story with Nevermind, MTV Unplugged in New York helped me through a tough time. This was an even darker time, and the rawness and live audio made me feel like Kurt was speaking directly to me at that moment. And the softer moments on this recording felt like a hug that I desperately needed. So once again, in 1994, I did not connect with this album, but for sure I have since then. And it is such a great album. I recommend that if you haven't listened to this in a while or you have never listened to it in its entirety before, you want to do it, you want to do it right away. Because it is everything that people say about it. It's a fucking masterpiece of live performance. All right. Before we get into the second part of this episode, we're going to take a quick break while you learn about another great member of the You Run Podcast Network. Right now, I want to talk to you about another great member of the You Run Podcast Network. It is the Ghoulish Gallery. If you are like me and love to hear about urban legends and local lore and spooky stories and talk about cryptids and all that stuff and have fun doing it, well, then you got to check out the Ghoulish Gallery because it fits that need tremendously. So go right now to YouRunPodcast.com and check it out now. You won't be sorry. All right, we're back. Now, imagine if you will, we are in 1994. And I don't know about you, but at that point, I'm in middle school and I'm in that awkward phase of my life where I'm not too fucking sure who I am, who I want to be, who I'm supposed to be. And I had plenty of neighborhood friends that I played around with, but there were many moments in my life when I was just trying to figure out what the fuck I wanted to do and who I wanted to be and what mattered to me. And then I came upon this little album called Dookie from this band Green Day, and it has stayed with me all of these years. Dookie is the third studio album by the American rock band Green Day, released on February 1st, 1994 by Reprise Records. The band's major label debut and first collaboration with producer Rob Covello. It was recorded in late summer 1993 at Fantasy Studios in Berkeley, California. Written mostly by frontman and guitarist Billy Joe Armstrong, the album is largely based on his personal experiences and includes themes such as boredom, anxiety, relationships, and sexuality. Singles off the album: Longview, released February 1st, Basket Case, released August 1st, Welcome to Paradise, released on October 17th, and When I Come Around, released in December of 1994. This album has sold over 20 million copies worldwide, making it the band's best-selling album and one of the best-selling albums of all time. Those numbers are astonishing. Rolling Stone placed Dookie on three iterations of its 500 Greatest Albums of All Time list and at number one on its 50 Greatest Pop Punk Albums list. Now, for me, at this point in time in my life, in 1994, when I'm 13, 14, I had not really yet experienced punk music in any real way. I didn't know who The Clash was. I didn't know the Ramones or the Sex Pistols or Social Distortion. I didn't know any of them, okay? So for me, this was my earliest punk experience, if you want to call it that. Now, I bought Dookie at 14 and loved the sound and the attitude. There was something about Billy Joe Armstrong's vocals that appealed to me at that age. In some way, he spoke to me. I think it was the themes, and I could relate at that time. We all could when we're at that age, and we're trying to figure shit out about ourselves, about our bodies, about the way we feel, and all that stuff, right? It's as if he showed me that an adult can be moody and weird and confused, and that it was all okay, and that it was all going to be okay. I remember from the very first drum sound and the vocal and guitar riff of Burnout that I was instantly hooked on its fun sound. Now, I have a sort of bizarre backstory to this album. I listened to this album on constant repeat in the summer of 1996 while sitting in my room playing video games. And more specifically, I was playing this video game Aladdin on a Sega fucking Game Gear. I don't even know how many of you had the Sega Game Gear, the, you know, handheld game console, but I did and somehow acquired this Aladdin game. I don't even know how, because I know I didn't buy it. I must have borrowed it from somebody, and I don't know what my fascination was with playing the Aladdin game, but I did, and it's weird, and it's, you know, kind of embarrassing, I guess. I don't know. Maybe some of you like Aladdin, but there I was playing Aladdin, and I don't remember any other video game that I played that summer, but I remember playing that stupid-ass game on that Game Gear. So what I want to know is, for any of you that have any fucking clue what the Aladdin game was and actually played a Game Gear, which is something that not too many people ever bring up, please tell me about it, because it would be a fun story. Okay, let me give you one crazy fact about Dookie. Dookie's success brought about an identity crisis within the band. Dookie helped bring punk into the mainstream, but its success led to new pressures for the previously anti-major label trio, branded by some as sellouts. "We were going through an identity crisis," Armstrong told Rolling Stone in 2001, of what it was like to record Insomniac in the wake of Dookie's success. "We felt like an underground band, but we were a mainstream band, so there's that thing that we do that we had to deal with." And it's a damn shame, right? It's a damn shame that that happens to so many artists in a lot of different mediums. You become successful and your peers call you a sellout. They tell you that you're not doing it for the right reasons. And how the fuck do they know? I guarantee that each one of them is only saying that, is only calling you a sellout because they're envious of your success. I mean, let's face it. Wouldn't you want to be a sellout too? If you're an artist, you want people to experience your art, what you have to offer. And the more people, the better. But why not make some fucking money while you're at it? Am I right? Of course I am. All right, enough with the haters. Let me tell you about my top five favorite tracks from Dookie, starting with my honorable mention, All By Myself, a quirky and silly little masturbation song that somehow closes this album perfectly. All right, my top five: Burnout, Chump, Longview, Welcome to Paradise, and She. I fucking love She. It might be my favorite pop punk song ever, okay? Ever. Not just on this album, but ever. The chorus slaps, and the hook is great, and I could listen on repeat for hours. Okay. What about my thoughts on the legacy of Dookie? It's one of the most critically acclaimed pop punk albums of all time. It's one of the most recognizable albums of the 90s, and it's a ton of fun. It holds up great to repeat listens and complements video game playing then, now, and forever. For me, Dookie was one of the first albums that I bought with my own money and will always be held in high regard for me. I talked about it. Its success is unbelievable. It put Green Day on the map. And yes, I know it makes it tough for bands when they're that successful on how to go from there, but Green Day's had quite a career. Whether you're a fan of them or not, they're undeniable what they've done and what they have meant to music. Not sitting here saying they're my favorite band of all time, but I do appreciate what they offered the music industry. So, with doing this episode, I went to social media, X specifically, Twitter, whatever the fuck you want to call it, and I asked some people what their favorite tracks from these two albums were, and I got some responses from some great people. So let me start with Pop Culture Yearbook Podcast, a great podcast that you should check out as well, and on X at Pop Yearbook, regarding MTV Unplugged, they had to say, "They're all great, but the only answer is, where did you sleep last night? A perfect performance. And I couldn't agree more. From another great network member, Dewey Pod Monster, Dookie, when I come around and she, yes, another person that loves she as much as me. They also go on to say, it's such a solid album. If it wasn't for the Descendants, I'd say it's responsible for pop punk. And to a degree, it still would be, just because of how commercially successful that album was. And such a great point made there. Also, check out Dewey Pod Monster. Such a great podcast. And finally, another one of my favorite podcasts out there, Totally 80s 90s Recall Podcast. And on X, at Recall 80s 90s, talking about Unplugged, their answer is every single one. And I cannot deny the fact that this entire album, from start to finish, is an absolute masterpiece. So trust me, I get that answer. And as far as Dookie, their pick is Longview and When I Come Around. So, there you have it. These two albums are amazing, and I've listened to both of them quite a bit, especially Dookie over the years. And going back and re-listening puts a smile on my face. I love these albums, without a doubt. For those of you who haven't listened to these albums in a while, please go do it. Trust me, you're going to want to. And what I also did is, in the show notes, I provided playlist from these two albums of my top five from each album. Put them together on a playlist for you if you wanted to check out those, if you didn't have enough time to sit down and listen to the whole albums, but you definitely want to, without a doubt. This has been a lot of fun talking about this, and I want to thank you for joining me. If you enjoy what you are hearing here, please do me a solid, go to Spotify or Apple Podcast and give us a 5-star rating. It will help for this podcast get out to more people. And that's the whole point of this, right? I want to be a fucking sellout. Just kidding. Listen, once again, thank you. I appreciate every one of you, and I'll talk to you again real soon. ¶¶